둘, 셋, 파!
For Hey Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
By the way, can I hear the loudspeaker a little bit higher? Because it's really low. Even more, even more.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thank you, as always, for making your way here for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with the entire series. You get three new interviews sent to you every single week. It's a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Great way to keep up with your favorite artists. And discover those new ones, you can grab us any of the usual spots, Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or again, anywhere you get your podcasts from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Don't forget to leave the series a rating, give the series a rating, leave a review if you feel so inspired as well. That always helps out. We've had some great guests on recently, including actor Tom Payne. He was here to talk about the film Imaginary. He's also in the upcoming Horizon, the Kevin Costner Western. Joe Keery, Stranger Things Joe Keery was here. We got to talk about a lot of things with Joe. Neil Finn of Crowded House dropped by. We had Paul Sun-Young Lee. You know him from, well, recently he was in Avatar, The Last Airbender, as well as lots of Star Wars shows he's in right now. Kim's Convenience, maybe most famously. Jasmine Sivas Jones also dropped by earlier this month. And that's just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, it's a double feature. Going to be talking with actor Nick Robinson and director Juan Carlos Fresnadillo about the new Netflix film called Damsel, starring Millie Bobby Brown. So it tells the story of a dutiful damsel, played by Millie, who agrees to marry a handsome prince, played by Nick, only to find the royal family, fronted by an evil queen, played by Robin Wright, has recruited her as a sacrifice to repay an ancient debt. You know that whole story. Thrown into a cave with a fire-breathing dragon, she must rely on her wits and will to survive. I'll be talking with the director Juan Carlos about flipping the traditional fairy tale storytelling upside down, pun intended, and how the film portrays not just a story of survival, but also women helping women. Juan Carlos also going to go on to talk about the near half-hour one-on-one shots we get with Millie, and how they base the dragon on felines instead of reptiles, and getting Licky Lee to cover a Johnny Cash song for the credits. From there, Nick Robinson's going to give us the motivation of playing a bad prince and his enjoyment of playing darker characters, as well as what it's like to play opposite legendary actors like Robin Wright and Angela Bassett, also in this movie. I'm also going to ask what it was like to be on the set of History of the World Part 2. He was in that last year. All that and more, let's talk Damsel. We'll catch up with Nick in just a few moments. Let's start out with director Juan Carlos Fresnadillo.
Hello.
It's a pleasure to meet you and congratulate you on this really Fantastic movie with Damsel. We'll start with the obvious place. Why this story?
I think, you know, I was so attached with this story the first time that I read the script, you know? Because I think what Dan Mazet did was kind of something that I was looking for a long time, which is a very unique and different take on a fairy tale, you know? And I've been a fan of these kind of stories since I was a kid, you know? And the way that he modernized and put the upside down, all the elements in the story are upside down in many ways, you know? Because he touches, in the story, he touches all the stereotypes about fairy tales, and he completely put it in a different way, you know? The stepmother, the princess, the prince, the father, even the dragon, which, by the way, it's one of my favorite things in the movie, because, you know, I think we're introducing something new on this kind of character, because we realize, you know, when we watch the movie that it's not a monster, it's not a beast, it's something else. And there is a background story that I think is gonna surprise the audience in a very cool way. So, you know, I think all these elements were in the script from the beginning, and I was a big fan of that. And I pushed for making this movie, so I was lucky.
I also love that it actually falls on the year of the dragon. I don't know if that, you know, nice coincidence for everyone, but...
Yeah.
With it, as you're talking about these flips and the story you get to tell, I mean, there's also this history of feminism, you know, when Millie lands in the cave and you have, you know, all these other women before her that have written the names and you find that throughout history of women helping women. And it feels how do I want to phrase it? Like, obviously, that's an important story to tell. How did you want to tell that side of it?
I think, you know, first of all, I think it's really important to mention the fact that, you know, for the first time in this kind of stories, you see how this princess has to save herself, you know? So there is nobody coming to this cave to rescue her. And she has to figure it out the way to, you know, to escape from there. And escaping from this hell place implies to face the dragon and, you know, and literally fight with him, you know, with her in this case. I don't want to give a big spoiler about that, but, you know, I think it's really important, you know, the idea that the only way to survive depends on you. And this kind of solitude that we have in the story for a long time in the movie, I think it's the heart of the story. And that's why I was so happy with Millie, because I think she really fleshed out in an amazing way this kind of quality on the survival experience, you know? And obviously when she found that there were other women in these caves and in some ways they were trying to help to each other with some kind of signs and a map, I think we create like a beautiful sorority among them, which I think it's also a very important element in the story, you know, how, as you mentioned, how women help women. And I think in this kind of, you know, context, we kind of witness with this kind of help how, in some ways, this is like a birth of a new heroine, you know? And Elodie represents all these women fighting in those caves. And in some ways, it's kind of a poetic justice about what happened, you know?
And you kept her grounded. Like, I feel like it would have been easy for a lot of stories, of course, to make her Wonder Woman, you know, or something like that. But you chose the different routes on this. And I'd love to hear, you know, sort of about that side of things as well, because she is. She's very grounded in a movie that it's still a heightened movie, don't get me wrong, but it still pulls very close.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's as I mentioned before, you know, the heart of the story in some ways is a survival experience. And one of the things that Millie and I discussed in the shooting was that we have to see through her eyes, through her physicality, how she is surviving. I mean, we cannot cheat this to the audience. We have to literally show how difficult is surviving in this kind of environment, especially when you have a dragon chasing you, you know? So I think that keeps the whole thing very grounded. And also, you know, the whole crew, and we had like a mantra in this movie, which was kind of funny because, you know, it was a persisting idea that I was look, chasing all the time, which is the fact that no matter if this is a fantasy movie, no matter if this is a kind of fable in many ways, we have to feel it real. We have to almost feel that we're watching a National Geographic documentary, you know, in terms of how it looks, how the monster, how the dragon looks like. And all these elements, you know, makes the whole thing real, and which I think it's part of the DNA of a good story in many ways. You have to convey that reality in order to put the audience in almost in the front seat of the experience, you know?
It also reminded me, as maybe it should have, you know, I was a kid in the 80s where the movies that we saw were dark, you know? They weren't always necessarily like Neverending Story wasn't a kid's movie, but it was a dark movie, you know, and it allowed us to grab on us. That you said, I think that you were kind of always attracted. Like, what? Why do you think that was? Why do you think you were kind of always attracted to these darker type of fantasy things?
I think, you know, I was so attracted to this because in some ways, all these kind of classic tales, all these kind of dark fantasy stories, in some ways, they have within like a metaphor or of something really important. And to me, Damsel is almost like the perfect example of how, with this kind of journey, you deliver such a beautiful story about being free, you know, and how, in some ways, in order to be an independent, strong adult, you have to free yourself about things from the past. And I think that's something that Elodie finds in this journey. She has to overcome things from her family. She has to overcome things from the situation if she wants to survive and being free. So I think in some ways this movie is about a metaphor of freedom and how important it is. And obviously, you know, you have to pay a price for that freedom. And that implies, you know, to go through very difficult places like Elodie does in this movie. But I think that's kind of the process of being an adult, you know? And this story, I think, shows really well how this young woman becomes a real woman, an independent, strong woman, which, by the way, I think is touching like a generational thing for sure. But I would say at the same time that this movie is for everybody, you know, because I think Elodie represents the human spirit in many ways and the necessity of having a proper coming of age in your life, you know.
A story for our time, for all time.
Yeah.
We'll be right back, right after this.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Juan Carlos Fresnadillo.
Once she falls in that cave and the movie becomes a tonal shift, and there's so much, it's like a one-on-one. What was that experience like for the both of you? I don't know how much you can speak for Millie, but to be, you know, in this cave and it really just becomes us and her, and that's it for a long time.
Yeah, almost like 25 minutes, if I remember well, you know. To be completely honest with you, I was a little bit afraid when I was prepping this, because it's kind of a test for the movie. It implies that you have to literally, you're naked suddenly, because we were in this beautiful kingdom with this beautiful place, and suddenly you're in a hole, a dark hole, with nothing. So I think it, as a filmmaker, was a huge challenge, you know? And obviously for Millie, you know, she accepted this challenge in a brave way, because there's nothing that she can deal with in that situation, you know? She only has, like, this voice chasing her, and this dragon, this presence, and the fire, and the whole thing, but you don't see, and there is no way to have a relationship in this place. So she's there by herself. So it is a very tricky area in this movie, because you have to build the survival experience step by step. And you have to make the audience feel that they are there. And they are kind of witnessing that in such a intimate way. So for me, the key element on this section of the movie was to properly create some sort of intimacy with Elodie. And that's why the camera is so close to her all the way through. Even when the dragon is attacking her, the camera is so close to her, which, by the way, it was another challenge for Millie because, you know, she had to do many of the stunts that we did in the movie because we were there and, you know, you're seeing her face. So, yes, the element, the key point here was to create that intimacy in order to witness how she is preparing herself to become the fighter that she finally becomes at the end of the movie, you know.
Did she have the voice to play off of by that point, the dragon's voice? Was that there yet?
Yes, she had the voice. Not everything, because we were kind of changing many things along the way. But she had like a big reference. And most importantly, what she had at the time was the spirit that we wanted to convey, you know. But as you can imagine, you are in front of a green screen with a guy with a wire and a little bubble and a light, and you don't have anything else. So you have to figure it out, the whole thing there. And that's why I'm so impressed every time that I watch the movie, because, you know, literally Millie, as we said in the shooting, she is literally watching a dragon, you know. You could see in her eyes how she's completely petrified about the presence of this dragon.
It's impressive, by the way, the dragon is. And based off of a cat, is that right?
I would say like a feline. I would say like a lioness, you know? Like a wounded lioness. That's what I would say, that in terms of the pitch that we created for the dragon, that was always the idea. Like a wounded lioness who is really, you know, full of rage and revenge. And that's why I really love, you know, the turning point on her, because suddenly you discover another face of the dragon, which I think is really emotional.
I love that. And I wanted to quickly bring up the music, Licky Lee covering Ring of Fire.
Yes, I'm so happy.
How did that come together?
I mean, the lyrics of that song, I think, reflects the movie in many ways, in some sort of ironic and fun way. So I was really happy when Licky accepted the challenge of making this cover. And she did an amazing job, and I'm so happy to share that with the audience. So I think we were lucky, you know, to have her in the movie.
Do you ever go into these moments with something like that in mind already, musically speaking?
I like, you know, to be inspired by music when I'm prepping, for sure. And I love to have multiple conversations with the composer about, you know, the kind of take that we would do in every single scene. But it took a time, you know, to really know what we wanted for the movie, because, you know, the process of the visual effects and the whole editing was really long, and it sometimes is difficult to handle the whole thing. So fortunately we had David, you know, the composer, and the big help of Hans Zimmer too. But I think what David Fleming did was such a beautiful thing, because I think he completely translated something that we discussed from the very beginning in the process, which was the fact that the music has to reflect every single step on the way in terms of the Elodie journey. The music has to reflect her heart, what she's feeling in every single scene. And I think he did a great job about that, because you can feel that what the music is telling you is completely related with her, with Elodie, which I think pushes so high, you know, the emotional level of the story.
And I'll wrap up with this one too, because I see your beautiful photography that you post online, and it really is just wonderful.
Thank you. That's a big compliment for me, let me tell you. Because photography for me is like my inspiration. So when I'm every time that I finish something, or every time that I'm thinking about a script, I go to the streets to take pictures, and that's my kind of meditation, creative meditation, I would say.
What did you find that you were, so for this movie, I guess I'll put that one in play. Like, what did you find that you were shooting in those moments of meditation, and how did you want it to look? You know, the tone of it, the look of it, because it does have a very strong look throughout it.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the big things that I discussed with Larry Fong, the director of photography, was the fact that we wanted to shoot this movie in a very special and unique way. And in this kind of a spirit to put everything upside down, we decided to show the kingdom, the kind of evil kingdom in this movie, we decided to do it just in the opposite way, meaning that it has to be so beautiful. It has to be almost like a full of gold light, you know, and it has to be mesmerizing, you know. You have to be kind of hypnotized by the beauty of this place. So that's why, you know, we decided to use this kind of palette of golden colors in the Orient Kingdom, because as much as if we push, you know, everything in that direction, then when you are in the caves, you feel the darkest time in this movie. You know, I think the contrast is huge, and you can sense, you know, the horror of being in this situation. So definitely, you know, Portugal also played an important role in this photography, you know, because the light, the places, the landscapes there are so special and gives you kind of an original take on these kind of kingdoms. Because normally, you know, when the dark fantasy tales think about locations, they usually tend to go to a kind of bleak places, you know. But Portugal is just the opposite. Portugal is flamboyant in all the elements, in all the senses, you know. And I think that was an important part of the story. And I'm so happy that, you know, they accepted to, I mean, Netflix accepted to go there and shoot the movie, because I think it elevates the whole thing into a different level.
Yeah, what a great place to spend a few work days too while you're at it. So,
yeah.
It is a beautiful movie. It is an exciting movie. Congrats again on what you've accomplished here. And seriously, thank you so much for taking the time to talk about it.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
My thanks to Juan Carlos. Part two, as I mentioned, Nick Robinson playing a very bad prince.
Hey, what's up, Kyle? It's good to be here. It's been a minute. I'm like, it's been a second since I've done press, so it's my first one back. So just, you know, getting the nerves out here.
I like to help you work out the cobwebs a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect. Good.
Well, I'll only ask you the good questions. We'll do none of the bad ones this time. But seriously, it's interesting because here you are, this prince with complications.
Mm-hmm.
This is not the Disney prince.
No.
Might be the easy place to start here, but how did you want to play this guy?
Well, I think you nailed it. This is, the whole movie is really about turning prior expectations you may have seen about fantasy films, you know, damsel in distress, and flipping it. And Prince Henry is very conflicted. He is trying to balance the traditions in his culture with his own morals, and those two are just coming into conflict the whole film. So it was a fun character to play. There's a lot of opportunity for conflict, both internal and external. And yeah, it was. We got to film in some beautiful locations, but Prince Henry is definitely not Prince Charming.
You know, you wonder about characters like this, or like, are they on a redemption story or anything like that? Because what we find out about him at the beginning, right from the beginning, is, I mean, there is, as you said, the culture. There's some self-preservation at play.
Definitely.
Like, he feels torn. I guess that's the way I feel about it. Is that what you wanted to project?
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad that it came across that way. Because he is, he's deeply conflicted and torn around these traditions in this kingdom. And he doesn't want to go along with it. But like you said, there is a level of self-preservation. My mother, the queen, played by the amazing Robin Wright, is not somebody to be messed with. So I think he wants to stay on his mom's good side and just do as he's told.
So when you do something like this, and especially on this first part of the movie, when everything is still a little bit bright and flowery, like, how do you keep something like this grounded? Which I do mean to say that it does come across very grounded. It doesn't come across that over the top that I think it could have.
You know, it's a lot of that has to do with Juan Carlos, our director, and kind of the world that he built. He didn't want it to look like a traditional fairy tale. And we shot it in Portugal, and the architecture, the castles there, all the landscape, it felt fresh, it felt different, felt like unfamiliar. And I think that played a part in, I don't know, having the film feel like a fully formed place and vision, and grounding it. And yeah, I think for Henry, you're just trying to, he's just trying to get by day to day. He's just trying to survive in this world. And so you play into that, I guess, as much as you can, and away from some of the fairy tale tropes.
You've done it before, but getting to play what ultimately is a darker character, how natural does that come for you?
It's just, you know, just like waking up in the morning. It's just, it's different. It's fun to be able to play different characters. I mean, that's the joy of acting, is to be able to play someone that's different from yourself, be put into situations that you would never normally be put into. This was no different. This just felt like a fun challenge. I'd never done a period piece like this before. It's high fantasy, it's castles, it's dragons, and finding ways to, like you said, ground the character and you know, also play this ultimately villainous guy, but not tip your hand too much. It was a fun balance.
And I guess what I'm getting through is, like, I was thinking back on Maid, like, which is a much darker.
Much darker, much darker.
But, like, do you ever consider, you know, because it's the job and it's the fun part of the job, right? But there's also those perceptions of the audience and who they have of you. And you, like, does that ever cross your mind? Like this is, people latch onto these characters, right?
For sure.
As truth.
I think for me it's hard to plan anything out in advance. It's hard to have some kind of master plan or trying to control how audiences or people look at you. I think I'm just going into each role just trying to have fun and bring as much life to the character as possible. And I think part of the hope is that you can jump around and play different characters, good guys, bad guys, somewhere in between, so you're not pigeonholed in any way. And so I think that's, consciously or not, maybe that's what I'm trying to do.
Do you, when you get a character, do you feel like you need that character to have a redemption of any sort? Does that matter to you?
Not necessarily. I think if it serves the story for the character to not be redeemed, I'm game. It's really more about, it's a team sport, you know? So it's not about just one character. It's about the whole picture. And so it just really depends on the project and the story that you're telling.
Well, I was, as Prince Henry, wondering if there's any relation to Henry VIII, if that was talked about at all, because it feels like there's a lot of...
Are you saying I look like Henry VIII in this movie? I'm a little offended.
I don't even know what Henry VIII looks like, but he sure was killing some wives.
He really was. No, I didn't... That never came up in conversation, but it's an interesting point, you know. I don't think there was ever meant to be a direct historical tie to any of this. This is all pure fantasy. Any connection to anyone living or dead is, you know, pure coincidence.
Fine print at the bottom, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Let me start these rumors now. I don't know how far this rumor is going to go, but...
it's got legs, I think. It's going places.
History nerds are going to love it, I tell you.
Yeah.
And we'll be right back, right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Nick Robinson.
There are great moments, though. I mean, shooting the ceremony and those masks, I mean, it is almost like that immediately becomes a different movie, you know?
Totally.
Like, I would love to hear about that. Like, you know, because one, there is a moment where I'm thinking Eyes Wide Shut with it. You can't with those masks anymore. That movie just did it for masks forever, I think. But like, what was it shooting on that day? Because, you know, for as much as it feels like a tonal shift for us, you know, for you all, what was it the same?
It was. That was the scene I was most excited to shoot. And that was the scene in the script that got me most excited for the film, period. At first, when I was first reading it, I thought it was going in a more traditional fairy tale route. And when that sequence comes up, that to me was... What made the film interesting and exciting was being able to play with audiences' expectations. And it was one of the first things we shot, actually, so I didn't have anything to compare it to prior, but it was a fun scene. The set design was incredible, and those masks, like you said, were pretty spooky. And it felt like a fresh idea. It's something that I hadn't seen before, with to quite that level of scariness, I guess is the right word. Yeah. But it was cool. But I think it felt like, since that was one of the first things that we shot, it felt like everything after that was a different movie. It was like, oh, we're gonna shoot like a scary thriller, and then after everything changed, and we started doing horseback riding through the hills of Portugal. It's like, oh wait, what? This is different.
You know how to ride a horse?
I've been learning, actually. There's a job I've been learning for recently. I'm doing a Western next, so I've been doing a lot of horseback riding lessons. So I'm getting there. I wouldn't say I'm a pro or anything, but I'm getting there.
I was looking at some of that stuff. What, Snack Shack, that trailer just dropped?
Yeah, that came out a few days ago, I think, or a week ago.
Yeah.
I'm excited. Also a fun movie, I think. So if anyone's listening, Damsel, Snack Shack.
God, I hope people are listening.
Hello?
I know we're against the clock here. I did want to ask, what was it like being part of History of the World Part 2?
Oh, it was fun. That was like, for me, I grew up watching Blazing Saddles and Young Frankenstein, and just to be a part of that world in a small way was just something I couldn't pass up, and it was a lot of fun.
And just all the, I mean, it's like everybody, anybody that's funny, even moderately funny, like just seemed like everybody a part of that.
Every comedian who's worked in the last like 30 years does a small part, and that was also, it was cool. It was just a fun environment.
Yeah. Well, you look lucky enough to get to work with some incredible people, and that goes back to Damsel here too. I mean, Robin Wright, Angela Bassett, Millie Bobby Brown. Like, I don't know what you can say, like, if casts feel different, because maybe they do, and maybe, you know, job to job, sometimes it blurs together, but there seems like when you've got this crew together, apologies for the generic part of this question, but what was that like this round?
I mean, they're heavy hitters, everybody. Ray Winstone, and by the time the cast had fully rounded out, that was also part of the thing. I was so excited to get to work with all of these titans, you know? I mean, it was great. I mean, everyone from Robin and Millie, Angela, Ray, like, and we all got to actually spend time together when we were shooting out in the country in Portugal, and it was a lot of fun. Yeah, it was definitely one of the reasons, one of the big perks, I think, of this job was getting to hang out with that group.
Jeez, Portugal. Here's your job. Come to Portugal.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
Yeah. Not a bad way to make a living. Yeah.
Not a bad way. Nick, seriously, it's a pleasure talking to you. Congrats on Damsel.
Thank you. It really is
such a fun and entertaining watch. And thanks for taking the time to talk about it.
Oh, likewise. No, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
My thanks to Nick. And again, thanks to Juan Carlos as well. Damsel is out now on Netflix. Thanks to you, of course, for checking out the episode and the series. Hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with all the interviews. 3 brand new ones sent your way every single week. A new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to keep you up to date on your favorite artists. And discover the new ones, Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And after that, head over to WFPK.org. So I do a show Monday through Friday. It starts at 6 p.m. Eastern. You get 4 hours of nothing but the coolest music from the 80s and 90s. There's great new music, bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. One of my recent shows featured some classics from Joan Jett, Fleetwood Mac, Marlena Shaw, Lords of Acid, Petula Clark, Julie London, Morrissey, Radiohead, Jade Bird, Jimmy Eat World, R.E.M., Tom Waits, Prince, Counting Crows, The Record Company, Beyonce, Jim Blossoms, Tori Amos, Casey Musgraves, Reverend Horton Heat, Maggie Rogers, and my interview with director Matthew Vaughn to talk about his latest film, Argyle. That was just in theaters. Just an example of what you get every weeknight, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. So I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith, and I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Thanks. Thank you. Thanks for easing me in.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Saving money on remodeling your home at Menards. Start your tile project off right with DentShield Tile Backer from Georgia-Pacific. It's proven to protect against moisture in your walls and subfloors with a built-in water barrier, making it perfect to use in damp areas like kitchens and bathrooms. Plus, its easy-to-cut design makes installation a breeze. Save big on Georgia-Pacific DentShield Tile Backer panels. On sale through March 2nd. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money at